This is Simply Lowai, and you're listening to The Expert with a Heart.
Because the fragrance of biryani is still hanging in the air, I thought, why not? Okay, not biryani, but let's start off on some khayali pulao. Let's assume we've got ourselves a nice fat bonus. So, Lowai, that's the note that I want to really start this episode on. So, yes, what are your three compelling uses for a fat sum of money that comes to you in the form of a bonus?
You know, one of the things I've done is done the Certified Financial Transitionist program, and that actually has a particular tool which says decision-free zone. And when you get large sums of money, it's a good idea for you to put it away for 3 months, 6 months, and in a safe place, and continue living life as if that money never came. That ensures that you don't do stupid things with large sums. Because with large sums, what happens is you tend to think that they will repeat, that it's a great time for, you know, let me spend this and buy this fancy TV or phone or go on this great holiday or have friends over and do ABCD. Then everybody gets used to this, right? And it's very difficult to come down a notch once you've gone up. And that really helps. Doing it allows you to continue life as normal without changing things just because I got a large sum of money. You as a person don't change, I think.
Yeah, but you haven't really given me those three compelling reasons, and I'm very fixated on that idea, Lowai.
So you know, I'm assuming that you have a good financial advisor. You work with the advisor, you look at your goals and say, okay, what else do I need to park this in?
Okay,
If it is surplus, figure out again based on your risk profile, how much of it you're willing to take risk, put it over there. And in the previous episode, we spoke of cravings. You want to put aside some money for cravings? Sure, do that.
Yeah. If you've noticed, Lowai has dodged my attempt to box him into three ideas.
I love the number three, by the way. So it's a good question you're asking.
Yeah, but then you're not responding with my three things.
You know, in school, we used to have in our exams, you know, you had to answer and say, give me five reasons why. And if you didn't write those five in the same order, you never got full marks. I never did. So, you know,
there you go. And I suppose prescriptions are not what you are handing out over here.
Not at all. And I think, unfortunately, we all are used to, you know, give me the solution for A or B or C. And especially when it comes to money, you know, the way you grew up and your experience with money when you grew up, when you were growing up, is a very important way you will deal with money as opposed to someone else. So you say, oh, I am from the same batch, I am same community, same age, same, you know, family background, whatever else. But the person will behave very differently. And your experiences also with money in the past will sort of nudge you in one direction or the other. So I think as an advisor, very important for us to understand you before we say, here's the prescription of what you should do with money. I think that there is no single prescription that fits all. There are concepts or principles like, you know, look at your goals, look at your risk profile.
Right.
You know, don't mingle your short-term and the long-term stuff. Beat inflation, beat taxes, grow your value of money. All that, yes.
All right.
All right. I see your point, Lowai. So maybe it is not really about three compelling uses for bonus. Maybe there are more, or maybe there's a different way you should be factoring in things like bonuses or the raise that you get at the end of a performance appraisal cycle into your financial planning strategy. And that is the topic on this episode of Simply Lowai. Welcome. And this is Sheetal. I'm in conversation with Lowai Navlakhi. So here's where I thought we'll start. What are the discussion points when you contact your financial advisor? And I hope you like the fact that I'm taking for granted that everyone has a financial advisor, because you know what? I mean, it's not like we cut our own hair these days, right? There's a stylist for that. And therefore, for money matters, there should be a financial advisor. But I'm going to digress. Is that a fair assumption? Are you seeing a lot more people today than perhaps, say, 10 years ago, reaching out to people like yourselves for financial advice?
I think we have moved for sure in the last two decades. The number of people dealing with advisors has certainly gone up. But I think it's still a far way away from, you know, the ideal type of number, because we still do come across people who are very knowledgeable, you know, experienced, and, you know, we're meeting them and this is the first time they're looking at an advisor because they thought do-it-yourself works very well. And some situations are people in finance a year ago have taken out all their money from the market thinking the market was expensive, and they have sat with the money in their bank account for a year and then now contacted us.
Right.
Because every time they thought they could enter, it was more expensive than when they took it out. So now I can't do it myself. I let somebody else do it for me.
Right.
So yes, we are facing that.
Yeah.
So there is an improvement, I would say, but it's still, it's far, far away from the ideal situation that it could be.
That's what makes these conversations fun with you, Roy, because suddenly some idea chumkos and then you're going in that direction. But to come back to the...
You like chumko?
I like this. Yeah. I like this. Like, I don't know why. Something about Bitti Naval and Chamko, but let's...
Yes, of course.
Miss Chamko. Correct. There's some soap powder or some saleswoman, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to sell the idea of a finance... No, we are not trying to sell the idea of getting a financial advisor, but while you know what to do, we are talking about performance appraisals and the impact that they have on your finances. So what are the things, I was asking you, conversations you should be having with an advisor this time of the year?
So once you've got your revised letter, obviously, I think the first thing you tend to do is to calculate what is the impact of that increase on tax or on a higher PF deduction or whatever else that is going away from your NPS deduction from your salary. And therefore, what would be your new net salary? Compare it with the past and say, okay, now, since it's going up by X, what am I going to do with that incremental X? I'm assuming the basic or the previous year's salary is all taken care of. You put it in the right places, all of that. So now this increment has come in. What should I do with it? So typically, we would tend to go back to the financial plan and the goals. Was there something where, you know, we did not have all the money to meet that goal and it was a priority item? And we had said, okay, over the next 3 years, we are going to get there. Now, can I use some of that money earmarked for that goal?
Right.
So, if that goal is 2 years away, then I invest it in a particular way. If it's 20 years away, I do it in a different way. And I think that's the starting point, really, that you need to take care of.
Now, when I was thinking about it, numbers, right? Most people end up with anywhere between an 8%, which will make them pretty unhappy, to upwards of like maybe 15-18% of an increment.
I wish I get that too.
18%?
Yeah.
I feel I'm deserving of some 30-40%.
You are a good number, right? Why 18?
It adds up to 9, which a lot of people believe is a lucky number when it comes to money and everything. But yeah, to come back, what kind of an impact can this sort of a range have on any... I mean, what does it even make a dent on your larger financial strategies?
So, I mean, if I think from a, not as a financial advisor, but as a management professional, frankly, it doesn't make a difference. It's almost like a T20 match, where in one over you got 10 runs, the next over was a maiden, then you got 5 runs. It's an average, right? So, of course, you think that every over you're going to get the maximum.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. So, even the best of players have an off day. They don't perform at the... you know, at the biggest sort of event. But that doesn't bring down their value, right? It's the same thing with you. And unfortunately, we equate the increase with, you know, my performance. But frankly, it's part of a whole bunch of other things, right? How well your team performed, how well the organization did, how well the economy did or your industry did itself.
Right.
So it varies. So you can't compare and look at someone else and say, oh, this person got this, so I got this. Look at your goals. Forget the outside world. Look at your goals. What is it that you need to ensure that you meet your goals? What would you do if you got less? If you got less, obviously, if you wanted to reach the same destination at the same time, then you needed to get higher return. So it's A multiplied by B is equal to C. So if A is lower, then you have to have higher B, you'll still get C.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's what it is.
You know, a lot of people I have spoken to do factor in raises in their plans, whether it's a holiday that they want to take or something that they want to buy, etc. And they hope that this raise is going to be able to take care of those expenses. But what if there isn't one? How does that affect your strategy?
So, I worked for 18 years before I started my business. And there were years where I thought I would get a good increment. I didn't. So I cried for a day. And the next day it was back to normal and say, okay, now this is the extra effort I have to put to make sure that next time I am, you know, in the top rank people in getting increments. So my sort of theory on appraisals, though, is that from the second person onwards, people are unhappy. The first person is fine with his increment. And second person onwards, now you start comparing. Oh, that person got X, I got Y. And there's always somebody who's unhappy.
So it's not like a financial advisor is going to come and tell you, okay, this time you didn't get a raise. So, you know, let's go back to your portfolio and relook at your exposure, your risk profile in certain asset classes. That's not going to happen, right?
I don't think so. I don't think that happens. So when we are doing, a plan, we are looking at certain assumptions of inflow, certain assumptions of goals and outflows, right? And also certain assumptions of returns. Now, what happens is returns are not fixed unless you're putting money in fixed deposits, a bad idea, except for a very small amount. So your returns vary, right? Even your goals, whatever you put down, it's not precise or exact. I mean, you might say, I need X amount for holiday and I'm going to do 2 international holidays in 5 years and this is the amount per holiday. If you don't go in and say, okay, no, now let me, leave this place half a day earlier because I run out of, because that's all the money I've allocated, right? So to that extent, what you need for your goals changes. The same thing will happen with the increment. If you might have projected that, your income or your net income will go up by X percent every year. It's not that. So the next time it may be more, it may be less. Now, if it's structurally changing, your industry is not giving you high increments. So your role is such that,
Not
AI has come in and reduced your importance. Or you now need to suddenly find I need to go and learn something. So I have to invest in myself so that I'm relevant and I'm back in the race to get higher increments and all of that. It's all par for the course.
So right.
That's something that we as advisors keep reminding people that you're not going to live your life based on the plan. Right? Life is going to happen and the plan has to get modified.
Correct.
But the broad direction, what your purpose is, what is priority, those are important pieces to look at. And I'm sure there are situations where suddenly things happen and then you say revise. That I'm not going to do this for X amount of time.
Right.
I mean, I remember when I was with the .com and lost the job. After a few days, I told the family, let's go out for dinner. And they said, Sukh Sagar. Let's go for dosa. So I said, sure. Yeah. They all feel, we feel like having this. The next time, 2 weeks later, it was again the same place. I said, hello, 1 minute, what's happening? No, you're not earning. The salary is stopped. So we are going to places where, it's like, yes, we'll go out, but we are not going to spend money. I said, no, that's not the way it works.
Yeah.
But I think we all do this, right? At some point or the other. Either we do it or somebody in the family
does it on our behalf. Yeah.
All right. I think here's where you can correct me if I'm wrong. But what I've observed is a lot of people, when they come into some money, tend to not think of their long-term plans when they think of uses for that money. They are immediately thinking of the car that they've been eyeing or some other object that they wanted to buy for themselves or their family members or something. So more like short-term cravings. I think you used that word in the last podcast. But yes, the temptation is to give in to these cravings and therefore address short-term needs rather than long-term plans. And then again, if you get a small increment, then there's no way you're putting that into your long-term plans. This is the sense that I have of normal human behavior. But is this true? Am I really off the mark?
So I think one of the things I remember telling clients many years ago would be that, if you are saving let's say 100 rupees a month, put aside 60 or 70 rupees, you know, through a systematic investment plan, so it's gone. It need not be in equity, it can go into a liquid fund, but it's gone. It's not in your bank account.
Yeah.
So when you go to the mall and you see your latest phone or a latest whatever craving that you have,
simply
you can't swipe your debit card because that money isn't in your bank. Now, if you really feel strongly about it the next weekend or 2 weekends later, then fine, go ahead and buy it. So at least you're not succumbing to temptation. And sometimes I don't think it's right to say that that 10,000 increment, everything has to be used for long term. You must have
some joy,
some money to enjoy. I mean, recently I wrote an article for retirees saying you need to have pocket money. Because as kids, you enjoyed pocket money. As retirees, why can't you have pocket money, which is the fun part? But obviously, you're not going to use the entire money that you, incremental money that you got as pocket money. Some part of it. Some part goes in the piggy bank.
Right.
Yeah. And I think if you have that concept, you're fine. So you don't want to sacrifice and say, oh, you know, what do you say? Delayed gratification is, you know, far better than... No. You enjoy your ice cream, you also keep money for whatever else, kulfi.
All right, here's where I'm going to go back to the start of our conversation. We spoke about bonuses and I did ask you for three compelling uses for bonuses. But yes, appraisals and raises are like, you know, they're an ongoing thing. If you get a raise, great, you know, you can factor that into your monthly planning. But some organizations prefer to also approach rewards and recognition with a one-time bonus. How does one approach or use a one-time bonus, factor it in, into the plan?
Yeah, so I think if you're disciplined enough and you can segregate and say out of the bonus money that comes, in priority, I'm going to put this 30% of it into this particular goal for this goal. The next 25% is going here, the next 40 is going here. And this is assuming I get 2 lakh rupees bonus. Now I suddenly, oh wow, this was a great year, I got 5 lakh. Then you have a different plan for the next 3 lakh.
Right.
And you might say, I've already used up part of this money for this craving. I had kept 20% of that 2 lakh for craving. So in this new money, I maybe put 10% more for craving. I don't want to put zero because then there is, you know, that feeling of, you know, I couldn't enjoy. I wanted to, but I remembered my advisor said, don't spend this money. No, spend some money.
Yeah.
But if you can discipline yourself... So it's like dessert, right? If you love the dessert, can you discipline yourself to have only one?
Yeah, right.
Tough one. So if you really love it. So otherwise, you don't nibble. And that's it. You don't need to go and go overboard with that.
Yeah. So basically, what will, as a person in the space, what do you typically tell people their approach to bonuses? You've given us a broad idea, but do you tell them that 25% of this is for craving, 40%?
No.
To advise
again, you're again asking for prescriptions and three percentages.
People
and
what? Like this.
No.
I mean...
No. I know they like it. But I think each person is different, right? So let's put it like this. Let's say there is someone who is... Their main purpose is to educate their child. And as of now, they have got to a situation where they have accumulated enough to send the child to a good institution in India. But the child really wants to go abroad. Now you got this lump sum where you can actually, and that is say 5 years later. But if I put aside 60%, 70% of that extra money, it will help, you know, 50% of the way for that. That person might do it. Somebody else who has not that as a priority and said, I wanted to go for, you know, to see the Northern Lights. I'll earmark that money and say, great, not only economy, now I'm going business class for that visit. I mean, so each person is own. I don't think there is a single way of dealing with money. And I think sometimes we advisors think we are exalted and we know everything and we should prescribe. I think that's a big mistake we make.
Now, this one should tell you that I have never ever in my life received a bonus. Bonus pe tax lagta hai kya?
Yes. Lagta hai.
Achha. Yeah. Toh wo bhi hai.
Yeah. So, you have to see the net amount after tax.
Okay.
any money that you receive now.
Always.
Yeah, so a lot of people complain about income tax. I tell them there's one solution to avoid the income tax. Mm. Avoid the income. But that's not something that everybody likes to, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, tax. You know, I think in the previous episode, again, this had come up when we spoke of investments. And then you had pointed out that how a lot of people approach investments with a primary and sole objective of tax saving. And that might not be the cleverest way to go about it. But yes, I want to ask you, have you come across some other interesting relationships? I use the word interesting for a reason. Even notions that people hold with respect to taxes specifically.
Like I said, I think the most important thing is people think that if they save tax, wow, we've made, gains.
Mm.
But if I've invested in a place which is, say, earning me 6%, but it's tax-free, I feel very good till I realize, oh, I could have invested in something which earned me 11%, but I paid 30% tax on it.
Mm.
That is more than this. Mathematically, 6 minus 0 is 6. 11 minus 30% of it is 7.7.
Yeah.
So you're better off with 7.7 than 6.
Correct.
But then, people will argue and say that is not guaranteed. What happens if it doesn't happen? Oh, no, I'd much rather be here.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
Till you realize, oh, for you, inflation is 7%. Then you're losing money with that 6% in 100% of the situations.
Mm.
In the other situation where 11% is a 70% probability, in 70% of the time, you are better off getting 7.7 versus 7. So, sorry, lots of numbers that I don't want to confuse everybody with that.
No, but I think like
make it simple.
Yeah. Simply low I. And we'll be back with another episode. And next time over, we're going to be talking about retirement. Correct, low I?
Sure.
All right. Good. That's what it is.
That was an episode of the Simply Low I podcast series. Expert with a heart.